Hi, this is Dr. Mike Chupp, and welcome to our very first special add-on segment, which we're calling CMDA Matters More Today, and a continuation of a very important conversation that our Senior Vice President, Dr. Jeff Barrows, and I had with Princeton Jurisprudence Professor Dr. Robbie George on First Amendment rights, specifically about free speech and what the Constitution tells us about our ability to speak up. Professor George is one of the most inspiring and courage-provoking, if you will, speakers I've ever heard, challenging us as Christians in every facet and walk of life to be willing to stand up, even though it costs us something, and speak out for truth as we know it based upon God's Word. Let's listen in.
I'm going to be shifting gears slightly a little bit here because I want to ask about your service with the U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom. And I understand you served several years as chairman. I wanted to know if you are still engaged at some level with international religious freedom. And if so, how would you characterize ongoing trends within that field across the world?
Well, thank you for asking me about that. It was one of the great privileges of my life to serve on and then to chair the U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom. I was there working with some wonderful people, some of my colleagues who were commissioners, and also the excellent staff of, we call it USERF, U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom. Someone with whom I served together who was an appointee from the Democratic side, I had been appointed from the Republican side, was the great Katrina Lantos Sweat. And Dr. Sweat and I, even though we're of different political parties, were on exactly the same page. We were singing from the same hymnal when it came to issues of religious freedom. And we worked together really closely and I think effectively to advance the cause of religious freedom wherever we could. I'm no longer a member of the commission. I reached my statutory term limit, as did Dr. Sweat. I was succeeded, not immediately, but I think one or two chairmen later, by one of my former students that I'm very proud of, Daniel Mark, who's a professor at Villanova University, who I taught both as an undergraduate and as a doctoral student at Princeton. Daniel is a wonderful and brilliant scholar, Orthodox Jewish man, deeply committed to the biblical faith, and someone who really cares about religious freedom, not just for his fellow Jews, but for all Christians and everybody else. So I've been continuing to watch the activities of USERF. Occasionally I'm consulted by people connected with the commission for advice or information that I might have, and I'm always pleased to help in that way. I try to stay in touch with issues of international religious freedom. I continue to be closely tied to groups in the United States who advocate on behalf of religious freedom. I'm on the board of the Beckett Fund for Religious Liberty, for example, which does mainly domestic religious freedom issues, but is also interested in international issues. I'm in touch with some of, we sometimes call them the diaspora communities here in the United States, the communities of members of different faiths that are being persecuted around the world. Rohingya Muslims, for example, Ahmadiyya Muslims, Tibetan Buddhists, Chinese house Christians, and members of the persecuted Catholic Church in China, Yazidis, Baha'is. I met some wonderful people from those communities when I was chairing USERF, and I've continued to stay in touch with them. I still write a bit from time to time about issues of international religious freedom. I really do care about that issue. We're in a terrible world when it comes to religious freedom. About 75% of the population of the world live under regimes that routinely violate the rights of religious minorities. And we barely, with all our efforts at USERF and elsewhere in the State Department here in the United States and so forth, have barely made a dent in that. But we have to remember that even making a little dent means that there are some people who are relieved of serious oppression that they would otherwise be suffering under. Whenever we get a political prisoner, for example, someone put in prison, we had examples of this when I was chairing, by Saudi Arabia, simply for their religious beliefs. Ahmadiyya Muslims are a good example. They're regularly persecuted in Pakistan and Saudi Arabia by the majority Sunni Muslims. And there were Ahmadiyya men who were simply put into prison, threatened with execution because of their beliefs. And Yusuf, we worked hard and we got them out of prison. Well, that was a gang of men, maybe 25 or 30 of them, who were sent back to their families. And that's a victory. Now, you know, it's, as I say, barely a dent, because there's still millions and millions of people are being persecuted, including Ahmadis. But, you know, there were some people whose lives were seriously made better and whose families' lives were made better because they were returned to their community and allowed, you know, within the restrictions in Saudi Arabia, to go back at least to some extent to practice their faith. I learned a lot serving on USURF. I learned, for example, that what is ubiquitous is the persecution of Christians. There are lots of different groups that are persecuted around the world: Muslims, Buddhists, Yazidis, Baha'is. But just about everywhere where you have persecution of any religious group, Christians are among the persecuted. I say that not to encourage Christians to think of themselves as victims. I don't want anybody to develop a victim mentality, but simply to acknowledge a truth. And it's a truth that's rarely acknowledged. And that's how widespread the persecution of Christians is. You find it in Saudi Arabia, for example, where a lot of Filipino guest workers are Christians and they're persecuted. You find it in Vietnam. You certainly find it in China. You find it in North Korea. You know, wherever people are being persecuted for their religions, if there are any Christians there, they tend to be persecuted as well. It caused my former USURF colleague, Elliot Abrams, who's a strong, powerful advocate of religious freedom. Elliot says, who is himself Jewish, he says, the Christians today around the world are what the Jews were at an earlier time, where no matter where you found them, it seemed to be they were being persecuted. And that's so often the case now with the Christians. Elliot, that's Elliot's point.
Professor George, you've been talking about international religious freedom. We've been talking about students and free speech on campuses. And I want to take us back in this extended time, back to student groups that are maybe listening to this now. Their faculty, campus advisors, their students are coming back to campus right now and wanting to invite speakers to come in and talk about some issues, some controversial, some not. And do schools have different requirements for outside speakers than for students or for faculty? And do universities, medical schools or dental schools, have the right, because they're concerned about controversy among the students, to prohibit one of our CMDA student groups, wherever they are, from bringing in a speaker that has views that are against the woke culture that we're facing right now?
To me, it's critical to the educational process and to the truth-seeking mission of colleges and universities, including their professional schools, such as medical schools. It's absolutely critical that a diversity of points of view be heard. So long as one point of view, these days it's the woke point of view, is taught as if it is dogma, handed down from on high, the educational process, the knowledge-seeking enterprise, the truth-seeking project will be very significantly inhibited. What you will get is not education, but indoctrination. And indoctrination is not only not education, it is the very antithesis of education. So it's terribly important that we prevail upon institutions, whether they are secular or religious, whether they are private or public, to make sure and be open to hearing voices, including Christian voices, that challenge the dominant orthodoxies, the dogmas on campus, including those having to do with sex and sexuality and sexual morality. It's critically important. Now, from the point of view of those of us who are Christian and Christian student groups, always make sure that you are proposing top quality speakers, not provocateurs. We don't need provocateurs. We don't need people to just go in and cause a fuss, just to shake things up. We need top quality speakers, well-informed people, thoughtful people, highly intelligent people who will effectively, intellectually challenge these woke dogmas. These dogmas, such as those in the area of sexuality, are extremely vulnerable. They survive only on the power in these institutions of the people who hold them. They are very vulnerable to critique, but we need first-class intellectuals, Christian and other, to go in and offer that critique, provide that critique. I mentioned my former student, Daniel Mark, earlier. Here's an Orthodox Jewish person who is a powerful critic of woke ideology. A Christian group would do very well to propose him as a speaker at a university, including at a medical school, because he is interested in bioethics. And then there are lots of people, of course, in the Christian community who are first-class thinkers, first-class intellectuals, including in the bioethics area, who would be called on to do this. My co-author, Christopher Tollefson, who is the chairman of the Department of Philosophy at University of South Carolina, a brilliant Christian bioethicist. It would be wonderful for students at Harvard Medical School or Stanford Medical School or Northwestern or Ohio State to hear Chris and have him challenge these woke dogmas that they have simply been reinforced in believing.
I believe Christopher is also a friend of one of our members and very prominent intellectual, a physician, Dr. Farr Curlin from Duke.
An outstanding person. Farr Curlin is an outstanding, but there's another person who they have him at Duke. That's great that he's at Duke, but he's got a message that should be heard, you know, at Yale and the University of Chicago and Kansas State and every place else.
They're putting out a new book in August called The Way of Medicine. I'm going to have him on this program to talk about that. And Leon Cass is someone that he highly respects. And I've promoted before Farr's recommendation on Leon Cass many years ago, just predicting what was coming in medicine in terms of being a provider and a vending machine as opposed to being a professional who can refuse to do a procedure or to prescribe a particular treatment.
That's exactly right. Leon Cass is a mentor of mine. He's a hero of mine. He's a truly great man. I served under him when he was chairman of the U.S. President's Council on Bioethics, and an awful lot of what I know about that field I've really learned from Dr. Cass. Again, he is not Christian. He is Jewish. But those of us who are Christian have learned and have an enormous amount to learn from him. Let me mention somebody else, Charles Camozzi, who is a professor in the bioethics area and a Christian Catholic at Fordham University. He has a new book out. Powerful new book out that's a critique of secularized medicine. He shows the baleful consequences of abandoning the sanctity of life ethic, the Christian ethic, the biblical ethic, in favor of a kind of quality of life life ethic. Professor Camozzi is somebody that the people who subscribe to woke dogmas really need to hear. They need to be challenged. They need to understand they could be wrong. And they won't know for sure whether they're right or wrong unless they allow themselves to be challenged like a guy by a person like Professor Camozzi.
Well, Professor George, I'd really like to ask you a very practical question. We have student groups at almost all of the medical schools across the country, and they've come under varying degrees of attack. And you've kind of talked about this a little bit in terms of the need to stand up and the freedom to do that. But what would you say to our students who are sitting in classrooms being taught things about gender identity that they don't agree with, and they're being told that this is dogma, or they're being told that, listen, if you don't do abortions, you need to not go into OBGYN, a different field of medicine, so that they're feeling very much on the defensive? How would you advise that medical student?
Fight back. Fight back very hard. Stand up for your own rights. When you do that, you're also standing up for the rights of others. If necessary, threaten, and if necessary, carry through on lawsuits to make sure that your rights are vindicated. Come to us at the Beckett Fund. We're interested in hearing from people whose rights, whose religious freedom rights, whose conscience rights are being violated. One of the things we're doing at Beckett right now is, and we're determined to win on this, is to finally bring down the regime of law that was established in the case out of California that upheld the right of a state university to refuse to fund a campus Christian group because the Christian group, it's the Martinez case, the Christian group insisted on its leadership being actual Christians, people who believed what the group stands for. That was a bad decision. We're going to bring that decision down. We've got cases in the pipeline. We're going after it. This is a time for playing hardball, not just because we like to win. It's not a game, But because so much is at stake, rights of conscience are at stake, precious human lives in the case of abortion and euthanasia and so forth are at stake. So much is at stake with the harm done to people in the name of gender identity, pumping kids full of hormones and even subjecting minors to life-altering surgeries, things that cause permanent infertility, sterilization, and so forth. You're not being willful when you fight back. You shouldn't think it's unchristian to fight back. The Christian thing to do is to fight back. We need to speak the truth in love, but speak the truth in love. Both sides of that equation are essential, truth and love. We shouldn't think that it's not loving if we speak the truth. And of course, at the same time, we shouldn't speak the truth out of bitterness or speak the truth in hatred or speak the truth just to hurt people. We need to speak the truth in love, but let's do them both. Speak the truth in love.
You mentioned Prof. George Beckett Fund, and we are very familiar, Dr. Burroughs and I, with Beckett Law, and just have appreciated working with Luke Goodrich on a case involving the Affordable Care Act and Section 1557 and mandating our members to do procedures that just they are professionally and by faith, conscience, are not willing to do. Are there cases that either Beckett or others like Alliance Defending Freedom, a Christian Legal Society, right now that you're aware of, and if you don't feel comfortable talking about a specific case, but can you share with us a case that right now is going on that you think is significant in terms of campus free speech?
Well, the cases that are in the pipeline that I just mentioned, I think, are the most significant because there's that area of law, that body of jurisprudence that was really established by the Martinez case is extremely defective. It was just a terrible mistake, if I recall the opinion was by Justice Kennedy, of course, who's no longer on the court. And now we've had personnel changes. We have Justice Kavanaugh. We have Justice Gorsuch. We have Justice Barrett on the court. I think they will be much more sympathetic and favorable toward conscience rights, toward freedom of religion. So that's why I'm really being optimistic here and hopeful. I think we are going to undo that body of law, and we're going to make it possible for Christian groups to be treated fairly again, equitably, on our college campuses. So those are very important cases. The conscientious objection area, of course, is right now hot. It's in a state of an unsettled state. We had good rulings in the Fulton case out of Philadelphia, upholding the right of the Catholic Archdiocese to compete on fair terms with other agencies that or bodies, religious and otherwise, that sponsor adoption and foster care. The city of Philadelphia, as you may recall, struck the Archdiocese of Philadelphia from eligibility for providing foster care services through its agencies because those agencies place children in homes with moms and dads where possible and do not place children in same-sex headed households. That was a 9-0 victory for religious freedom for the archdiocese, and a good one. We also had a big victory, of course, a couple of years before in the Masterpiece Cake Shop case. That's the case of the baker and design artist Jack Phillips, who would sell anybody a cake off the shelf for any purpose they wanted in his shop. But if you wanted him to custom design a cake for you, use his artistic talents to send a message, he refused to send a message that was contrary to his Christian beliefs. For example, he wouldn't give you a custom Halloween cake because he doesn't believe in Halloween and he thinks it's a pagan holiday that's anti-Christian, nor would he design a cake that celebrated same-sex partnerships. Although we've had those victories, the decisions were on fairly narrow grounds, leaving open questions that really need to be resolved by the court. So we've got some cases in the pipeline. Some of them are being handled by Beckett. Some of those are being handled by ADF. Some are with other groups that I think will enable the court, I hope, if necessary, force the court to settle matters that are currently unsettled because of the narrow nature of those two very important and valuable and commendable decisions.
Well, we've basically run out of time, and you've been really generous with your schedule with us today, Professor George. I just wanted to appreciate that you are a man of great hope, and I like in one of your writings that you mentioned that despair is a sin against the Holy Ghost.
That's right.
And so because of your relationship, long-term relationship with First Things, the journal, I believe you would call it, Father John Newhouse, and a challenge, you concluded an interview that you had with Public Discourse a few months ago with a challenge from Father Newhouse. And I'm guessing most of our listeners haven't read that or come across that. Would you just repeat for our listeners today what you shared with the editor of Public Discourse in terms of what you gained wisdom from Father John Newhouse?
Father Richard John Newhouse was an amazing human being. He was ordained as a young man, Lutheran, became a pastor, became very active in the civil rights movement. He was a close associate of Martin Luther King, marched literally arm in arm. I've seen a beautiful photograph of him marching arm in arm in one of the demonstrations in one of the southern cities with Dr. King. So in those days, he was regarded himself as a liberal, because to be a liberal was to be in favor of civil rights. And he was certainly in favor of civil rights, the equal dignity of every human being. And he thought this was a requirement, which indeed it is, of our Christian faith, because there's nothing more fundamental to the Christian faith, it's right there in Genesis 1, than the idea that each human being is the bearer of profound, inherent, and equal dignity as a creature made in the very image and likeness of the divine ruler and creator of the universe. But when the liberal movement and the Democratic Party went left on the moral issues after the civil rights crusades of the 60s, and started embracing abortion and sexual immorality and so forth, Father Newhouse found himself suddenly out of that movement and on the conservative side. He became known as a neoconservative, one of the Christian neoconservatives. He was also on his own spiritual journey. He became a Catholic and then was ordained as a Catholic priest. Those of us who knew him, and he was a great friend of people, Protestant, Catholic, and Jewish. He was a great unifier of people from the different biblical traditions. Those of us who knew him always said that we were going to engrave on his gravestone the words, "We're going to turn this thing around." And that was because of his optimism, although he would insist that's not optimism. Optimism is a mere matter of optics. He would insist it's hope, it's hopefulness. And hope is not a mere matter of optics. Hope is a virtue. It's an activity. It's an active thing. Doesn't matter whether we're optimistic or pessimistic, we should have hope. We should have that virtue. It's one of the great theological virtues. The three theological virtues are faith, hope, and love. St. Paul tells us it's the greatest of these is love, but that doesn't mean that hope doesn't matter as well, and it's a very important virtue. And he lived by that. He lived with that hope, and it was infectious. It turns out that hope is like courage and, alas, cowardice. That is a contagious thing. Have you noticed that?
Yes.
Cowardice is contagious, but courage is contagious. Well, hope is contagious, too, and those of us who have the blessing of knowing Father Newhouse well caught that hope from him. If you see it in me, it's probably the fruit of my friendship with Father Newhouse. One of the last speeches he ever gave before his death, he died, he was only 72, hated to lose him. Shortly before he died, he gave one of his last speeches to the National Right to Life Convention. And what a magnificent speech it is. Please go online and do a search and look it up. It may be the greatest pro-life speech ever given. And the theme of the speech, which he came back to time and again, was never weary, never rest. Never weary, never rest. That was his advice, what turned out to be his parting advice to those who were his fellows, his partners in the pro-life movement. So this is for all of us Christians. It's for all of us who believe in the sanctity of human life. No matter whether things look dark or bright, never weary, never rest. Keep the struggle going. Stand up, speak out, never weary, never rest, never weary, never rest.
Wow, powerful, so powerful. Thank you, Professor Robbie George, for joining us today on CMDA Matters. And we believe it matters more today as we encourage Christians who are going through their training. You know, medicine has this apprenticeship, and you're so influenced by those a year or two ahead of you on the path, and they're influenced by those ahead of them. And it is kicking against the goads, as Jesus said to Saul on the road to Damascus. It's not common for us in medicine to kick against the goads. And so you give me hope, absolutely, as a professor at Princeton, in a place of great influence. We will pray for you, Professor Robbie George.
Thank you.
And listeners, I want to encourage you to pray for Professor George and his influence, as well as Christopher Tollefson and Farr Curlin and others within our profession who have a great deal of influence. Thank you. And I hope that we will get to cross paths and maybe even get to convince you to come and speak sometime at our national convention for CMDA.
I would love to do that. I'd love to meet more of your members. And thank you very much for conversing with me today. It's really a pleasure to be on the podcast.
You know, understandably, many Americans are concerned about the rising threats to their religious freedom. They feel the culture changing all around them, and we fear that our beliefs will soon be marginalized as a form of bigotry. Others, young Christians in particular, are tired of the culture wars, and they wonder whether courtroom battles are truly worth it, or even in line with the teachings of Jesus. In the book Free to Believe, Luke Goodrich, who's with Beckett Law and has helped us at CMDA, offers a reasoned, balanced, gospel-centered approach to religious freedom. He applies biblical understanding to a number of the most hot-button cultural issues of our day. He also offers practical steps that Christians can take to respond to religious freedom conflicts in an informed, responsible, and graceful way. And on top of all that, Luke just wrote to me yesterday and passed the incredible news that a district court in Texas had issued what we've been waiting for since the days of David Stevens in 2016, a permanent injunction against the transgender mandate. We praise God for this incredible result. Well, these perils and the antagonism faced by the West, as well as the church, are really unprecedented. Threats to religious liberty, redefinitions of marriage and family, and attacks on the dignity of human life. How should we as Christians respond to this multifaceted challenge? Addressing each dimension of this challenge, Dr. Albert Mohler Jr.'s book, The Gathering Storm, provides answers and equips us as Christians both to give an answer for the hope that is within us and to contend for the faith that was once and for all delivered to the saints. You can pick up your copy of Luke Goodrich's or Al Mohler's book today at cmda.org/store or by calling 888-230-2637 today. Well, in case you haven't heard, on Saturday morning, August 21st, CMDA is hosting a webinar that we're calling A Loading Dose of Faith Prescriptions. Well, today I've got Dr. Bill Griffin, around here we call him Dr. Griff, who's the Director of Faith Prescriptions, here to tell us more. So, Griff, welcome. This webinar seems like a great opportunity to introduce our members to the new Faith Prescriptions series.
Mike, I could not agree more. This webinar on Saturday, August 21st, will be a tremendous event for our CMDA family to hear from two colleagues regarding spiritual interventions with our patients. First, Dr. Farr Curlin, a hospice and palliative medicine physician at Duke University, will speak on the case for practicing medicine Christianly. Along with Dr. Kathy Scarborough, a family medicine physician and residency instructor in Gadsden, Alabama, who will speak on sharing the good news. Their talks will be followed by a Q&A session, a great opportunity for docs to drill down into each topic. I'll be hosting this event, just trying to stay out of their way, as our viewers are equipped to meet the spiritual needs of their patients.
Griff, I think this is going to be a perfect introduction to this new Faith Prescriptions series. What is the schedule regarding the videos that you've been working on for such a long time?
Well, we're planning on a total of 25 videos at this point, and the first 10 are currently available on CMDA's Online Learning Center. These videos will be led by 20 different doctors from across the country, addressing a wide range of topics, taking a spiritual history, praying with patients, keeping it natural, addiction treatment, caring for refugees and immigrants, and many others. At this webinar, I'll be releasing the titles of the first 10 currently available and also the titles of the next 15 episodes to come.
I bet many listening right now want to register. How can they do that?
Well, this is easy. Registration, which is free to members, happens at CMDA's website, cmda.org/events. Just scroll down a bit till you see a loading dose of faith prescriptions and you're there.
Thanks, Griff. I really look forward to joining you and Farr and Kathy on August 21st, along with many of our colleagues, our members and volunteers.
Great.
I want to ask you listening, are you struggling to help patients achieve their health goals? To help colleagues out of burnout? To care for your own well-being and stop trying to fix others? Beginning on October 12th through November 16th from 3 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time, and that'll just be one afternoon a week, a six-week intensive training that we call the 501 Foundations in Christian Coaching, and that will take place via Zoom online. I truly hope you'll take advantage of this wonderful opportunity to learn and to grow in foundational knowledge and your coaching skills. You just go to cmda.org/events for more information. We've also made it easy for you to get your hands on a copy of Dr. Fuzz Rana's book, Humans 2.0. You can just click on our Book of the Month link in the show notes or go to cmda.org/bookofthemonth, one word, and make your donation of any amount today to CMDA, and we will ship a copy to your door. After you attend our webinar with Dallas Theological Seminary this weekend, I have no doubt that you will want to hear more from Dr. Rana yourself. So if you've been considering supporting CMDA, August is a great time to do so, and we'll send you Dr. Rana's book. I really want to encourage you, if you're a woman in healthcare, to consider the Women Physicians and Dentists in Christ in-person conference for 2021. There's still time for you to make arrangements to attend September 30th through October 3rd in Grand Rapids, Michigan. You can not only qualify to get 16 hours of live CME credit, but also there are enduring CE credits that will be available in our Learning Center. For more on this or just to register, you can go to cmda.org/events or click the link in our show notes today. Well, as I bring us to a close in this program today, we know that protecting First Amendment rights for healthcare professionals like you, as well as grad students in healthcare, matters big time to our members here at CMDA. Because being salt and light in this present cultural moment matters to our Lord and great physician, Jesus Christ. Making sure that you, our listeners, understand your legal rights and constitutional protections so you can exercise them matters to CMDA, and CMDA matters. Thanks for listening today. If you enjoyed today's episode, be sure to like and subscribe so we can be reaching more healthcare professionals. By the way, I want to give a shout out to two people who've worked so hard for the last 18 plus months to make CMDA Matters a reality every week of the year. Our assistant producer, Brianna Snyder, and our sound engineer, Rusty Sluter, who faithfully work hard to bring you content that educates, encourages, and equips you that you might glorify God as a follower of Christ in healthcare. Next week, I'll have a very important conversation, along with Jeff Barrows, with Dr. David Prentice about the development of a so-called death culture in the United States and what we can do as Christians in healthcare to stop it. Don't miss it. Until then, may the Lord bless you and keep you, make His face to shine upon you, and give you peace.
This podcast has been a production of the Christian Medical and Dental Associations. The opinions expressed by guests on this podcast are not necessarily endorsed by the Christian Medical and Dental Associations. CMDA is a nonpartisan organization that does not endorse political parties or candidates for public office. The views expressed on this podcast reflect judgments regarding principles and values held by CMDA and its members and are not intended to imply endorsement of any political party or candidate.